Service Animals in Action. Chances are, at some point, you have encountered a service dog wearing a vest, helping its owner navigate public spaces. All kinds of people depend on service dogs. People who are blind, older people, people who are coping with post-traumatic stress, have autism, amputations, or any number of needs. And who doesn't love to see a beautiful, smart canine helping its owner? It's estimated there are more than 500,000 service dogs aiding people in the U.S. today. There are also other certified service animals such as miniature horses and cats. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn more about the expanding role of service animals, and we'll discuss the controversy over what constitutes a legitimate therapy pet. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A service animal can make life so much easier for people with a range of needs, from physical disabilities to emotional challenges. Today, we'll learn about how these animals can be trained to help people in many different ways. Joining me in the studio, Linda Murray. She is co-founder and vice president of Canines on the Front Line, and John Locke, who is a longtime member of Maine Medical Center's Therapy Dogs program, and his service dog is a certified therapy dog. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you know someone who could use the help of a service animal? Are you concerned about people over-applying the term emotional support animal? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you today. And I want to start just by asking each of you how you got involved in this. Linda, how did you get involved with service dogs?
Actually, I got involved with service dogs because of John. My son had a long residency at the Barbara Bush Children's Hospital at Maine Med, and his dogs came around to see my son every week, and he said, "Mom, I want a dog." We ended up getting him a dog, and one thing led to another, and I ended up in a program for veterans and service dogs. We provide fully trained PTSD service dogs to Maine combat vets for free.
Okay, one thing led to another, from getting a dog to being co-director of a program.
Yes, yes.
Fill in the blanks there. How did that happen?
I was training my dog with some police canine handlers from Portland, and I met the man that co-founded this nonprofit with me. He was training his dog as well, and we both had a strong feeling about helping veterans in the state of Maine. And like I said, one thing led to another. We founded the nonprofit about 3 years ago.
Okay. And how many dogs have been through the program so far?
We've given about 100 dogs
Wow.
to Maine combat veterans for free. We are all volunteer, and we've raised about $300,000 grassroots fundraising here in Southern Maine in the last 3 years.
Wonderful. Okay, John, how did you get involved? How did you first become part of the therapy dog universe?
Thanks. I got my breath taken away with what Linda just said. It flushed back a lot of memories to me with her and her son at Barbara Bush at Maine Med. I got started with my first canine, Jake. It was interesting. He and I appeared to have a good relationship together. We worked together every day, and someone made a recommendation that, "You have a great canine. Did you ever think about having him become a therapy dog?" And that's how I got into being a handler of a therapy dog. I was encouraged by people to do it, and I looked into it, and I found my way to Maine Medical Center.
What makes a great therapy dog? I'm guessing some obvious things, like not a dog who's nervous and growls, but what else?
It's a great question. I get asked that a lot, and we are looking for a few good canines at Maine Medical
Center. We're looking for a few good canines.
We're
I like that.
We're looking for a few good canines. We cover the whole entire hospital of Maine Medical Center, so we require a lot of dogs. I think we've been as high as having 50 working canines at the hospital. We're well below that now. So we are always looking for good, well-mannered, tempered dogs. And very simply, if you feel you have a dog that you could imagine him or her visiting nursing homes or hospitals or schools or whatever you would feel would be a good mix for him, you would be surprised that we could really use you, and you would, I would feel you would have an amazing amount of fun doing it.
Okay, so I want to get, oh, go ahead.
I just want to reiterate what John just said. I think what the therapy dog volunteers at Maine Med do is absolutely amazing. Not only do they volunteer their own time, but the dogs make such a difference to the people that they go see. And John and I have talked about this. It's not just on the children's floor at Maine Med. It is across the whole spectrum with adults and children. And it's important for people to understand, if you don't have a dog, we have dogs, so we understand. But dogs have an emotional intelligence where they pick up on things that other people may not, and they really do make all the difference. So John and all of the volunteers at Maine Med that do that are making a really big difference.
So let's talk, come back a little bit and talk a little more broadly. The dogs that you train are considered service dogs, and the dogs that you work with are considered therapy dogs. Are these interchangeable terms, or are they two different things?
They're two very different things. So a service dog is trained to provide a service to one person. They don't provide services to anybody else. That doesn't mean that they can't have relationships with family members of the handler that they have, but they're very trained to just keep it, you know, their focus zeroed in on whatever their handler needs. And they also have different rights to go into different places than a therapy dog, or even, you know, further on in emotional support dogs. So they are allowed by law in restaurants, in hotels, airports, hospitals. They're really allowed to go just about anywhere with their handler.
I think many people are familiar with service dogs for the blind. It seems to be one of the oldest and best established service dog programs. But why don't you talk about, Linda, we've mentioned post-traumatic stress and that service dogs are used for with veterans, but also survivors of other trauma who have post-traumatic stress, the blind. What other ways are service dogs being used today, and what ways that are maybe different than 20 years ago?
Yeah, so I think, you know, 20 years ago or so, we were all used to seeing dogs out with people who are in a wheelchair or a seeing eye dog, things like that. The dogs that we train are really to act as a buffer between their handler and the general public. They really have their back. They make them feel supported, and they kind of help keep a distance between other people and their handler.
What other ways, though, are you familiar with? I've read that, we've posted a picture on our Facebook page of former President George H.W. Bush with his adorable service dog, Sully, the Labrador Retriever. So what would Sully be doing for George Bush?
So, yeah, this is interesting. I actually talked with Lee Goldberg about this right after George Bush got that service dog a couple of months ago. So he obviously was going through a huge life change. He'd spent the greater part of his life, 60 years, with one person, and then that person is gone. That's a huge void to fill. And again, just going back to the emotional intelligence that a service animal has and how they are always focused on that person. You know, sometimes it's just a matter of going up to that person and, you know, climbing up into their lap with two paws and, you know, just noticing that that person's having a hard time. They're crying, they're emotional, and it just makes a big difference for them. So it seems like it's not something that you can necessarily put your hands on. But like I said, anyone who knows what a dog can do, just even when you walk in the door from work, imagine that dog being focused just on you and being hypersensitive to your emotional state at every moment.
John, tell me about what a day with a service dog at Maine Medical Center or at another hospital that has a therapy dog program will look like. You walk in the door and then what?
Oh, nice. We work at Maine Med twice a week. We're assigned now at Maine Medical Center to specific floors. And we work on the same floors weekly. So we build a strong relationship with the staff as well as the guests of the hospital. In a normal day for us, we arrive at Maine Medical Center at approximately 2 o'clock. And we're there for anywhere from an hour to 2 or more hours sometimes. it's up to the canine when he or she, when they are when they're ready to be done. But what we do is we check in. Our dogs have badges. We are all volunteers of the hospital, so we follow the volunteer protocol. Our dogs do have little badges, so we scan in, and we are required to sanitize anyone who touches our canine, be it a guest or really anyone in the hospital staff. We require them to sanitize their hands before and after the visit. So our floors are, we're in the intensive care ward we're assigned to, oncology, and the psych ward. So all very different types of floors, and we break them up during the week. When we arrive, we come into the nurses' stations. We let them know that we're here. There's usually great excitement. The staff usually circles around Seamus, and there's a little kumbaya. We just spend time with the staff, which is very important that people know that we're not there only visiting the guests of the hospital. We are also visiting the doctors and the nurses and all of the other staff, because depending on the floors that we're working on, you could probably imagine some of the amount of stress that the staff is under and the situations that are happening to them on a day-to-day basis. So we're very mindful of the rhythm of the floor and what is happening. And so we're never going to be in the way of anything. We're going to be available for the staff as they need us. And then we go to room to room, unless it's a floor where people are moving in the hallways. But we always ask if the guest would like a visit. We run about a 99%.
Yes.
Yes. And we're always very mindful of the scenario and the situation and all the members of the family that may be with the guest of the hospital. So as long as everybody is comfortable, we come in and we spend as much time as the guest or the family or the staff want to be there. It is not uncommon for Seamus to be sprawled out, laying down in an ICU or an intensive care ward with a half a dozen nurses sprawled, and maybe a doctor too, sprawled out, just taking 5 minutes just to become mindful and just kind of regenerate themselves, maybe get a minute, a respite from what's happening.
Mm. Now, your dog spent a lot of time in our room.
Yeah.
Yeah. My son would get so excited. His former dog, Gypsy, is the dog that he had 5 years ago when we were there for almost a year. And Nolan looked forward to it so much and would lay on the floor with him and all the other therapy dogs. So they spent, we kept them in our room quite a while.
We get really, or at least I do, I make relationships with the guests, and some people have to be in the hospital, like Linda just mentioned, you know, more than just a night or two. And we become very mindful of the of guests, and it is so rewarding to get to see them as many times as we possibly can. For me to go into a room and to see a stack of our calling cards all around the room, because every time we visit, we leave a card, and I have so many memories in my mind of different people that I've spent so many hours with. And I carry them with me at all the time. And I'm always thinking about them.
We're going to go now to Nancy Friedman Smith, who is a service dog trainer. Hi, Nancy. Thanks so much for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Tell me, I understand, and correct me if this is wrong, that you train regular dogs and do regular dog training and also service dog training. Tell me about the difference in timeline and intensity.
That's a good question. I help owners train their own dogs. So there's such a need for service dogs right now, and there's many reasons that people choose not to go through an organization, and I always encourage people to contact the major organizations where sometimes they can even get a dog for free, like from Canine Companions for Independence. So I don't really do it as a source of income. Well, of course, I do get paid, but what I'm saying is I don't do like a big hard sell. I actually try to talk people out of not training their own service dogs because it's really a lot more intensive than people think it's going to be. And it's really hard when you have your own disability and life gets in the way to have a concentrated training time with the dog.
Mm.
So
you discourage people, but if they're stubborn and say, no, I want my dog, this dog, to be my service dog, and you're working with people with disabilities, what can the dogs offer to these people? What can you train them to do? Can you train them to pull a wheelchair or open a door?
Yep. So service dogs, to have be granted public access, they need to be task trained. So they need to do something that helps the person. It could be anything from, like you said, helping pull a wheelchair, get their medicine, keep them out of panic attacks with interrupting behaviors that we teach. They could alert if somebody falls. They hearing alert. There's all sorts of jobs. But the number one place where people fail, unfortunately, is calling people like myself after they have the wrong dog. So getting the right candidate is really key.
How do you know if your dog is the right candidate?
That almost all of them are.
Oh, gosh, you're breaking up. Can you answer that again?
Almost all of them are not the right candidate. So they need to have a certain amount of drive and a willingness and a wanting to work, and they need to be able to be out in public and enjoy, you know, having their lives different all the time. They need to be able to deal with lots of different people, situations. They can't have, like, prey drive. They can't be interested in people, kids, squirrels. I mean, it's a really skilled job for a dog.
Well, Nancy, thanks so much for calling in. That's Nancy Friedman-Smith. Her business is Good Dogs Training. I wanted to ask you, Linda, do you think there are certain breeds that are better service animals? Is there a reason that George Bush has a Labrador Retriever?
I'm going to go ahead and say no, based on my experience, only because we use almost 90% shelter dogs.
Wow.
We also have wonderful trainers. We train our dogs with active duty police canine handlers. And so if you've ever seen a police officer with a police dog, you know that dog will do whatever that police officer says, and they don't pay any attention to anyone else but that police officer. So that's who's doing our training. And what they'll do is, we have a great relationship with the Animal Refuge League in Westbrook and some other partners that we have. And the police will go there with the veteran who is going to be receiving that service dog and look and see if there's a connection. Like Nancy said, there definitely has to be something there that you, again, you can't put your hands on it, but you can see it when it happens. And you're looking for a dog who is not skittish, who's not intimidated or shy. And it doesn't necessarily matter if the dog barks. That can be trained out of it. If the dog doesn't sit when you ask it to at first, it can be trained out of all those things. It just it needs to have, like Nancy said, a willingness to work. I mean, obviously, we're not going to give a German Shepherd to a veteran who's 68 years old. That's going to be a disaster for that person. But a lot of the shelter dogs we use are just mixed breeds, 40, 50 pounds, and, you know, we're saving their life, too. So it's a win-win for everyone.
We're talking about therapy and service animals. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com. And Woodford's Family Services, reminding you that you can make a difference in the life of a Maine child today by becoming a foster parent. Woodfords.org.
In Martin County, Kentucky, many people haven't drunk from their taps in years.
You take it for granted until you don't have it. And I think that's the attitude of a lot of people right now. But they don't understand how close they are to it happening to them.
I'm Ari Shapiro. The fight for clean drinking water in America and continuing coverage of Hurricane Florence this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening. There's a new improved public affairs program now airing on Maine Public Television. The newly expanded Amanpour & Company, which is now an hour long and is broadcast each afternoon at 4:30. Journalist Christiane Amanpour leads wide-ranging, in-depth conversations with global thought leaders and cultural influencers on the issues and trends impacting the world, from politics, business, and technology to arts, science, and sports. This program has just expanded and can also be seen at midnight, and it also airs at 4 a.m. and noon on Maine Public Television World Channel.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, how service animals and therapy animals help people. Joining me in the studio, John Locke. He is with Maine Medical Center's Therapy Dogs program, and his service dog, Seamus, is with him. And Linda Murray, co-founder and vice president of Canines on the Frontline. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now, Barbara Archer Hirsch, who's Maine Human Rights Commission's counsel. Thanks for calling in, Barbara.
Thanks for having me, Jennifer.
You deal with the legal definition in Maine for what a service animal is. Can you explain any important distinctions that people ought to know about?
Sure. The Maine Human Rights Act actually covers two different types of animals. One is a service animal, which is a dog that is individually trained to perform work or tasks to benefit an individual with a disability. So that's the type of dog that Linda trains and has been talking about. The other thing we cover is assistance animals. And assistance animal is a term that's used in the context of housing. And an assistance animal can be two things. It can be essentially the same as a service animal, or it can be an animal that a medical care provider, and we've got specific types listed in our statute, determines is necessary to mitigate the effects of someone's physical or mental disability. An assistance animal is a lot broader category and can be any animal, not just a dog.
And is this the part of the law that is kind of controversial? That because there's, a lot of people who worry about the overuse of, emotional support animals.
People do worry about that. And the issue of service and especially assistance animals is one that we at the commission field calls on literally every day, whether it's from people who have assistance animals who are frustrated because they're trying to find housing and their landlords are saying that these animals are pets, or whether it's landlords who feel like all of a sudden people who have had pets now can call them an emotional support animal or an assistance animal and have their pet stay with them in an apartment.
Are these difficult cases for you all to determine?
It can be, and each case is different. It really depends on the circumstances. So we have cases that are hard, and we have cases that are very easy to decide. I will say that a lot of our cases in this area tend to involve people who simply don't know the law. I mean, if you get someone who's a landlord who rents one apartment or two apartments, they just might not be aware.
All right. Barbara, I'm going to ask you one of the questions that's come in from our listeners, because I think of the three of you, you're the one who may be the person to answer. This is from Judy, and this is on Facebook. My question is if there's any possibility of a national registry or state-to-state registry where animals would have a license, like a driver's license. There are many times when I know an animal is not a service dog, but they have on a service dog vest or jacket that someone has purchased online. Do your panelists think this is a feasible idea?
Well, I can tell you, I sat on a panel discussing service and assistance animals a couple years ago that the governor had formed. And this was one of the topics that came up and that comes up a lot. Right now, there isn't a registry. Federal law doesn't allow for it. And, of course, that means that the state can't create one either. I don't know. I don't envision it happening anytime soon. I think the goal is to get as many people who need these animals the appropriate help. I will say there are, I mean, I've heard this a lot, that people can just buy vests. There are also, and I saw this myself the other day, there are people who go online and purchase so-called registrations or licenses showing that their dogs are a service animal. There's no such thing. There is no legitimate service animal license right now, and not for the foreseeable future.
Barbara, before we let you go, anything else we feel you feel people need to understand about the role of service animals in Maine?
I would caution folks, when you're dealing with service animals, to make sure if you think somebody is using the excuse that they have a service animal, please remember there are only two questions you can ask when you have a service animal in a place of public accommodation, and that's whether the animal is necessary for a disability and what service or task the animal is trained to do. We run into folks who, again, not necessarily meaning badly, but who will ask, what's your disability? People who want you to show them medical records. So I think that's important. I'll also throw in a plug for our website. We have pamphlets on our website, as well as a little 5-minute video that talks about the difference between service animals and assistance animals, and when each term applies and what they mean.
All right. Well, thank you so much. That's Barbara Archer-Hirsch. She's the counsel for the Maine Human Rights Commission. We're going to go to Lou, who's calling from Green. Hi, Lou. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a comment and a question. The comment is, I was in a store recently, and a woman had a dog on a leash, a black dog, and I acknowledged the dog. I said, "Hi, fellow," or something like that. And then the woman started berating me by saying, "Do not talk to him. He's working. Why don't people pay attention to service dogs?" And I said, "I didn't know." And she reached down, and there was a little black tag on the dog's collar that was facing the wrong way. I think it said something like service dog. But I am one of many people who would certainly respect somebody's service animal if I knew it. My question is, what obligations does a person using a service animal have to inform the public, and can you give us some guidelines to people about responding or not responding when they do see a service animal? But I did not know this was a service animal.
Great, Lou. Thanks for your call. It's a good one. Go ahead, Linda.
Hi, Lou. Sorry that happened to you. I can understand, as someone who loves dogs myself, I tend to run towards any dog that I see, too. So I think that really that kind of fell on the handler right there. I think part of having a service dog is really, it is their responsibility to make others aware, especially if they don't want to be approached and they don't want that dog to be approached. They need to do a better job of sending the message that that dog is indeed working and that that dog is a service animal. And going back to what, I'm sorry, what was her name who was just on? The Maine Commission Human Rights.
Oh, right. That was Barbara.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Barbara. Going back to what she was saying as far as certifications for dogs and everything, I really think it rests on the general public to really just be on our best behavior and not abuse something that is there for the people that truly need it. So in terms of going online and buying your own vest for a dog and calling it an assistance animal or an emotional support animal, you really are putting the rights that service dogs and assistance animals have in jeopardy, because at some point the public is going to get fed up with that. If the animals are not behaving well, it's diluting the importance of a service dog. So there are no certifications that somebody needs to show, as she was saying. But really, as far as that instance that happened to Lou in the grocery store, I think that that person should have done a better job advertising that that dog was a service dog.
Thank you, Lou, for your call. Let's see. Right now, we're going to go to Rebecca Henry. She's an occupational therapist with Carlisle Academy Integrative Equine Therapy and Sports. She's also an adjunct faculty member with the University of New England. Hi, Rebecca, and I'm so glad you could call in.
Hi, Jen. So happy to be here.
Tell us what Carlisle Academy does. We're not talking about dogs here, are we?
Not at all. We are working with equine, so horses, and we do a wide range of things. We have occupational therapy and physical therapy, as well as individuals trained to work therapeutically with horses to help individuals in a number of different areas, so mental health, physical rehabilitation, and drug and alcohol rehab. So quite a wide range of things.
Linda talked a little earlier about what makes a dog special in the relationship with a human being. What is it about horses that helps people physically and emotionally?
Horses are, I always consider them magical animals since I was a child. So it's, and I think that they still have that quality for me. And it's because they allow people to be, they can read people in a different way than humans, and they don't judge. They take you for what you are and what you're offering, and they meet you where you are and work with you where you are and can help you get stronger in that way. So I think it's a non-judgmental factor that they bring that makes it so much easier for some humans to interact with them.
You say humans, so equine therapy is not just for kids, for adults as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I say our youngest client that I've worked with at least has been about 18 months, and I think our oldest is into the late 90s, so quite a wide range, and many different diagnoses, so quite a wide range of people.
Thank you so much. That was Rebecca Henry. She's with Carlisle Academy, where she's an occupational therapist. We have a text from a listener. My dog used to warn me of seizures. He was a shelter dog. I called Mr. Bentley. So I think that this is interesting because I'm guessing from the text that this dog didn't have special training, but was doing what dogs do naturally.
I would assume that that dog may have had some special training. I don't know of a dog that could, our dogs aren't trained to do anything to that degree, but I would assume that there may have been some training. I'd be interested to see if she would text back in again and let us know. But again, that just speaks to the whole notion, you know, an old dog can learn new tricks. These are shelter dogs that have been unwanted by other people that can be trained into something absolutely amazing.
We have an email from Mimi. I have a 13-year-old golden mix who does not growl, bark, or lick. He's pretty much deaf, and his favorite thing is to be adored and patted. Would he work out as a therapy dog?
Oh, that's a great question. I wanted to mention that we are, for May Medical Center, one of our certifications of choice is Alliance of Therapy Dogs, and you can Google them at therapydogs.com. We have 15,000 members. You could go and read about therapy dogs on their website, but to your point, yes, he could be a therapy dog. However, if you were going to join us at May Med, the time you went through all the protocols, it would just be the amount of window that the canine had available to actively
work. So 13. How long does it take to go through the whole sort of
it's a great
qualification process?
Yeah, you can definitely fast track it. I start my puppies young. We actually can certify with Alliance at 1 year old. However, you cannot onboard to May Medical Center to 2 years. I'm not aware of an age restriction after 2 years, but there is a minimum of a 2 year. And then from there, as long as the dog is able to certify and then go through our onboarding at May Med, and he passes all medical from your veterinarian vet, and that's done on a yearly basis, he potentially could qualify.
We'll go to Paolo in West Bath. Hi, Paolo. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes, hi. I'm enjoying your discussion, and I'm enjoying all your guests. I'm 76 years old. In 1968, I experienced some very traumatic psychological events in Vietnam right after the Tet Offensive. And so I've been diagnosed with chronic PTSD, service-connected. I just wanted to add one more point. I enjoyed every point made so far. I wanted to say that probably dogs are more intelligent than cat or monkeys, but animal, the name animal comes from the late Latin word anima, which means soul. Most animals need to be loved, and in consequence of that, they are aware of the state of mind of their owners. And in consequence of that, they can detect changes in behavior or in feelings. I had a Siamese. I still have a Siamese cat. When I don't, for example, the anniversary of my depersonalization is August. And every August is like an anniversary. I don't even, I'm aware that it's going to happen to me, but it will happen. And I just withdraw and I don't have feelings. But an animal, a cat, will know. He senses he senses what's wrong with me. He'll come on my bed if I try to hide, and you know, and depression kind of comes in and settles down. And or if you're anxious, you know, because anxiety and depression are sisters or brothers, you know, all together. But I agree with the lady that trains dog. She made a very good point about this extra sixth sense, or to detect a change in behavior and to be with you and to be loved and to love you.
Paolo, thank you so much for calling in and sharing the story of you and your Siamese cat. It's lovely. Go ahead.
Thank you, Paolo. And we just want to say thank you so much for your service. I never knew that animal had that Latin definition, but that is going in my vocabulary now as soul. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We do have to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's program. We're going to be talking with Sarah Just, executive producer of the PBS NewsHour, to get an inside look at the show. So if you have questions, you can email them ahead of time at mainpublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. Today we are talking about service animals. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Friends School of Portland. For preschool through grade 8, teaching peace in a changing world. More information at friendsschoolofportland.org. And New England Cancer Specialists, committed to leading the way to better outcomes for 50 years. More at newenglandcancerspecialists.org.
On the next Speaking in Maine, we join the Midcoast Forum on Foreign Relations in Northport.
Satellite images from the past few weeks indicate that North Korea is expanding the missile production facility.
Korea's human rights violation has no parallel in the contemporary world.
Jack Davis and Melanie Kirkpatrick join us to address the state of North Korea since the meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump this June. That's coming up on Speaking in Maine, Thursday afternoon at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
Maine Public invites you to the 14th Annual Camden International Film Festival, which runs this year from this Thursday through this Sunday. The Camden International Film Festival is widely recognized as a top documentary film festival, and Maine Public members can save 10% on tickets. For more information about the 2018 Camden International Film Festival and the Maine Public member discount, visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, service animals. Joining us today, John Locke with Maine Medical Center's Therapy Dogs program, and Linda Murray with Canines on the Frontline. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Elaine, who's calling from Canaan. Hi, Elaine. Go ahead.
Hello. I've been very impressed with the information provided by this show. Excellent job. I have disabling PTSD, and I've been using a psychiatric service dog, handler-trained psychiatric service dog, since 2003. I'm co-vice president of an organization called Psychiatric Service Dog Partners. And I just wanted to speak to the fact of why there is no national registry and why there shouldn't be in terms of what it would mean to disabled people. Our community questions the the biggest question is who would do the testing, who would decide which service dog really was a true service dog, and it would cause expense and trauma and difficulty for our population. The laws that are in effect now, the ADA provides businesses with the right to eject any dog, legitimate service dog or not, but any dog that's not behaving correctly, is dirty, barking, jumping on people, or disrupting the course of business. The laws are already in effect. It's kind of like shoplifting. It's against the law. It's against the law to misrepresent a dog as a service dog, and so there already is a structure in place. And
yeah.
A national registry would cause great difficulty for disabled people who already have barriers to life.
Elaine, thank you so much for calling in and answering that question and sharing that perspective. I think it's a really important one. I appreciate it. We're going to go to Lynn, who's calling from Sanford. And Lynn, you're the owner of Mr. Bentley?
Well, was.
Was. And Mr. Bentley could detect your seizures. Did Mr. Bentley have training or did he just have a natural sixth sense?
Probably a knack. I was born with what is called silent seizures, where my brain just shuts down. And when I got him at the Kennebunk shelter, he would bark and bark and bark at me. And I'm like, what? And I would snap out of it.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that and for calling in with the follow-up. I appreciate it. We're going to go to Carol, who's calling in from Wyndham. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. My question is, I have a golden doodle. She's a little over 2 years old. And my goal for her when I first got her was to get her right into therapy training, but for therapy rescue, therapy, I'm sorry. And she's very smart. I've taught her a lot of tricks. She's mindful on the most part. But my question is, when do you judge a dog's ability to start really technically training? And there's so many places out there, so many offers of training. It just seems like it's overwhelming.
So is your question really, Carol, you've got this special dog and you're trying to figure out what's a good fit and how do you figure out where might be a good place that dog can be of service?
More in the therapy, because we don't need her for service dog, but I want her. She's so lovable that she would make anyone happy for a visit in the hospital or a nursing home. So,
okay, great. Yeah. Great question, John.
I'll help out with that. Again, therapydogs.com is a great website to visit, but we always tell people that just relax. It's a if you have a great dog and it's a great temperament, I really believe that you're going to be successful. So that's number one. When the dog is programs like Good Citizens or anything, any type of canine classes offered from Planet Dog or pet stores or people that you know or trainers, the real key is that the dogs are well socialized. They are comfortable in the environment that they're going to be working in, and they just have good manners. But if you get through that first hoop, which is getting certified through Alliance of Therapy Dogs, which again, our website, therapydogs.com, and if you wanted to work at Maine Med, we'll work with you. We have three visits that we'll do with you in the hospital. They're relaxed, they're fun, they're enjoyable. We'll meet. I can have my dog with you, or I could work alone and you could just be with your dog. And it's a nice, relaxing process. And I don't want anyone to be afraid of wanting to have their dog become a therapy dog. Really, the focus for the short amount of time we have today, if it just is a good citizen, if it's a good, well-mannered canine, you're going to be successful.
Good luck, Carol. Sounds like you have a great dog. We're going to go to Freeport and Roy. Hi, Roy. Is this Roy Driver?
It is. Yes.
I'm so glad you called in. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to put a plug in for another organization that trains service dogs. I'm an advisor to a nonprofit organization called Embrace a Vet, and it has two functions. One is to have three retreats a year, offering alternative treatment modalities for veterans with post-traumatic stress. And the second function is a service dog program, and similar to your guests, and we provide a 16-week training program for veterans with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury.
Well, I appreciate calling. And it's
The website for those who are interested is embraceavet.org.
Great, embraceavet.org. And, you know, it's funny, Roy, we were just talking about this during the break. Linda, there are so many organizations that are really coming from a fantastic place and doing fantastic work for not only veterans, yes, but other people.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We'll move on to Jenny calling from Winthrop. Hi, Jenny. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if a person wanted to become a trainer of service animals or therapy dogs. I think I grew up in New Jersey, so the first thing I think of is the Seeing Eye in Morristown, New Jersey. But if a person wanted to do this kind of work, to work with these dogs, train them, and help them find a useful home, what kind of background might it be handy and helpful for a person like that to have to go into this field? And I'll take my answer offline.
Okay, thank you. I'll speak to our side of things as far as the service dogs for veterans. We use police canine handlers, and that really is just because there's a really great kinship there between the combat veterans that we serve and the police officers who do the training. However, they have a lot of real-world life experience with dogs, as you can imagine. But I think for John's program, the therapy dog program, I know that's totally different, so I'll let him speak to that.
For us, I do all my own training myself, and ours is all, again, really the foundation is good citizen canine courses.
All right. We will go on to, let's see, Michael calling from Wyndham. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to actually talk about people who can't be near dogs because of allergies. I have several family members that have severe to life-threatening allergies to animals, and there really isn't a place in the law for these people. They're supposed to be protected as well, but the rights of the people with the dogs always need to come first and foremost. And another problem is because of so many people that are claiming to have therapy animals or assistance animals or, you know, service animals, it's becoming overwhelming that my family members can't go to places, can't go to stores or doctor's offices for fear of becoming ill. And, you know, where do they fit in with all of this?
That's a great question. No, we no longer have Barbara Archer Hirsch from the Maine Human Rights Commission on the phone with us, and she's the lawyer. Do you all have thoughts on this?
No, he's talking about that he doesn't want to have interaction with a canine.
He's talking about members of his family being very allergic to dogs.
Absolutely, and that's a great question. Thanks for asking that. I can only speak at with our therapy dogs and working at Maine Medical Center. We're very mindful of that. And earlier, I hope I made the point, we don't visit anyone at any time or have any contact with guests or visitors to hospitals unless we are asked. So we would not, if we were walking down a hallway or going into a room, we would always ask if a person would enjoy a visit from our dog. And when we're moving around the hospital, we're well marked and we have badges on and such. But our dogs do not wear vests that say service animals. So a lot of the people that see us ask us if it's okay. And I'm always so grateful and appreciative, but I always let people know that no, they don't have to ask us. We are here for them. The dog that we have is for all, and it's not for myself or anybody else. The dog is here for the guests of the hospital.
Michael, thank you so much for your call. I'm trying to figure out, we have so many comments to go through. This is an email from an anonymous listener. My brother's youngest daughter was able to bring us an emotional support cat to her first year of college in the fall of 2014. My sister, whose son completed suicide during his junior year, wonders if that might have made a difference for him.
I mean, it's definitely, it's hard for us, I think, to weigh in on people and their situations that we have no clue about. Again, I'll just speak for us and the difference that we see for our veterans who struggle coming home post-deployment and what their dogs do for them.
Sean on Facebook says, love canines on the front line and all they do for veterans. Shout out to the people over there. Recently, my husband and I, he's a teacher, were asking ourselves, why are there not any service dogs in schools and classrooms? With a combination of emotional needs and safety issues, we wonder why there aren't more trained dogs in our schools. Seems like a great fit.
Well, our lines dogs, are allowed into schools. We have to be invited. So there's a possibility that the school itself is not asking us. They can go directly to therapydogs.com and request our dogs to visit. We get requests all the time. Long story short, we're working currently at the University of Maine system during exams. We just started doing that in the last year or so with the students at the law libraries. They're studying for their exams, and we're walking around with our canines trying to take the edge off that stressful time for the students.
Linda, what's the biggest challenge for you, canines on the front line? Is it raising the money to train the dogs?
I get asked this a lot. So it's actually not raising the money. We find that the general public here, very, very supportive of our veterans locally. So we do have to work to raise the money through fundraising. But really, it's finding veterans for the program. Actually, I should say veterans finding us. Now that we've expanded a bit and we've served almost 100 people, we have veterans referring men and women that they served with over to us, which is great. But we work with some mental health providers. We work with some providers up at the VA hospital at Togus and, just try to spread the message that
we're
here.
You think there are many other people who
could
benefit?
There are so many people. Maine has 113,000 veterans and we're a state of 1 million. And so we are here. It is a free service to them. And it doesn't matter to which degree you struggle.
And you have we're almost out of time, but yep. A fundraiser coming up. The Canna Cross Race and Trail Run. On
yep.
the 23rd.
Yep, so that's on the 23rd. It's at 9 a.m., and there's a race that you can do with your dog. There's a race you can do yourself, and there's a kids' fun run, and that's at Smiling Hill Farm, and I'm sure you'll post that info on your
website.
I
will. Thank you all for being here. That was Linda Murray, co-founder and vice president of Canines on the Frontline, and John Locke, a member of Maine Medical Center's Therapy Dogs program. His dog, Seamus, is a certified therapy dog. John Keimel ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, PBS NewsHour's Sarah Just. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.